This podcast is brought to you by Harvest Family Church in Mississauga, Ontario. For more information, please visit harvestfamilychurch.ca. We hope you are encouraged by today's message from our lead pastor, Brent Coulter.
Well, we are in week three of Triple Header Sundays, and what we've been doing throughout Triple Header Sundays is just emphasizing family. We are a family church, and there's a lot of generations represented in our church, and so we kind of wanted to celebrate everybody. And so a couple weeks ago, we had Kids Life Sunday, where we had the kids up here leading us in worship. Last week, we had the students and John talking. And then this week is Mother's Day, and it works out well for us to celebrate the older generation. So you can decide which generation you're in and how old you fit on the older scale. But everybody in our church family is important. And we as a church, we sow a lot of seed into our children and our young people. But also, everybody of every age is important. And what it's great for us to remember that we always have something to offer. Within a church family, once again, we have all these generations. But when we find ourselves older than someone, I mean, if you're 20, you're older than someone in this church, and if you're 30, you're older than someone, and if you're 40, all the way up the line. And we always have something to offer somebody who is coming after us. And hopefully one of the things that we learn as a generation to follow, whichever generation that is, that we don't, that we can avoid some of the mistakes that our predecessors made. Amen? And part of what comes with that is just being humble, being able to learn from the generation that precedes you. What are some of the things that you learned? What are some of the things that you did wrong so that we can avoid those things? And for us to be able to do that, we have to humble ourselves a little bit. Isn't it true? And so what we wanted to talk a little bit about today, and my mother is going to do most of the talking. I'm just going to help her a little bit, maybe ask her a question or two as we go along, which she's nervous about, but she'll be fine.
I know.
Is we are going to talk a little bit about the stages of parenting in general, but some things specific to motherhood and specific to being a mother-in-law, which I don't think there's a lot of teaching about being a mother-in-law. And then she's going to talk a little bit about her favorite thing, which is being a grandmother. So all that said, I just want to welcome my mother today on Mother's Day. You drank out of that one, right?
No.
Well, somebody did.
Not me.
Okay, we won't use that one. Well, maybe I did.
First of all, I want to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that are here. And I'd also like to honor the mothers, the memory of the mothers who have already passed away. And that would be my mother. I can hardly believe it's been 10 years since she passed away. Just seems like yesterday. And I honor her memory and the wonderful things that she instilled into me. And she was a godly mother, and she taught me a lot of wonderful things. So I honor her memory today. Being a mother is a powerful and it's a challenging role in our life. And with the children that God has blessed you with. And I was thinking about this, that we're stewards, because actually these children are on loan to you for a short period of time for you to raise and to nurture. And so today we're going to be sharing some parenting thoughts under four different stages. And I believe we have those on the screen. And
right. We kind of did like a breakdown. Now, this breakdown is not scientific. It's not exactly the same with all of your children. It's just kind of four general times or seasons of parenting. And once again, they're not the same for all your children. Some of your children may be slightly advanced or, you know, maturing at different times, things like that. And so we wanted to have some principles specific to all of these stages. And really, the last stage is the goal. All of the stages that precede it are for us to be able to have friends, as when you're no longer living at home, that you want to be friends with your children, right? Hello?
I hope we're friends.
You want your children to want to come to your house, right? After they leave the house, you want them to want to be with you. And so that is the goal. The goal is the friendship side of it. And there might be some students in here are looking at these ages and be like, no way, I'm not waiting until I'm 19. I'm in charge of my life now. Just relax. when you become a parent, we'll let you talk. All right.
Before we get into the four stages, I just have a few things to mention before. And I just want to talk about transition, because going from one stage to another, there's always a period of transition. And what transition means is change. And life is filled with transitions and change. And it's just like in the natural, if you're moving from one city to another, there's a time of transition, getting used to the new house, the home you're in, or to the school you're going to. Or if you change jobs, there's always a time of transition, time of change, getting used to this new job. And when you're single and you get married, that's not my phone, is it?
No, it's mine.
No. When you're single.
I brought my phone because I want to tweet something you say at some point.
Oh.
So.
That makes me nervous. And then when you're single and you get married, there's a big time of transition. You're no longer just doing your own thing. Now you have a spouse to consider. And then when you're married and you have children, this is what John Spence is just experiencing right now, this time of transition, having this little one in your home that's 24/7 to look after. So I just wanted to mention transition because it's very important, and change is not something to be afraid of. It's important for all of us. I think the goal for all of our parenting, too, is to build a strong foundation in your children. I think we'll read Matthew 7:26 and 7:20. Yeah.
But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the steams rose up, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash.
Yeah, to me that sort of speaks of you want to build a solid foundation for your children so that they can become to stand on their own and be independent. I mean, that's your goal. You don't want to keep them with you for the rest of your life. That would not be good. And also that you want them to be able to stand when the storms of life come their way. So that's the biblical principles that you would be teaching them. And another thing is not just to pray for your children. Some people say, oh, I'm just going to pray and everything will turn out fine. No. I'm not saying don't pray for your children, but you have to do something. You have to be very intentional in raising children. You have to have purposes and aim, and it just doesn't happen. Good children just don't happen. It takes work, just like we said a few weeks ago, a good marriage takes work. So you were a lot of work, Brent. intentional parent teaching, what I find, there's some principles that are very important to me. There are a lot of values and principles, and these are all found in the Bible. And, you know, some people say, oh, what's the Bible got to do with raising children? It has a lot. There's a lot of wonderful principles, and especially if you read in the book of Proverbs, it has a lot of good things to say about children. But anyway, these are some of the things, the values that I thought of: obedience, honesty, respect, integrity, and responsibility. Now, those are the things that you want to teach your children, because those are the things that they're going to need later on in life when they're no longer with you. I think we'll read Ephesians 6, 1 to 3 there.
Right. The first few words of this are your least favorite as a child, and then when you become a parent, they're your favorite words.
Obey and... Yeah.
Children, do what your parents tell you.
Yes.
This is only right. Honor your father and mother is the first commandment that has a promise attached to it, namely, so you will live well and have a long life.
Yeah, I think, isn't that wonderful? That's one of the promises, God. You'll live well if you obey your children. You're going to teach them to be obedient so that they obey their parents. And then also when you get older, you honor your parents and you'll live long and have a long life. James 1 and 5 is another good scripture.
If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him.
Yeah, I think when you're raising children, you don't know what to do. You can always ask God. Not you always. You should always ask God for wisdom. Many times I've cried out to God. I said, oh, God, what do I do here now? What I need wisdom in how to handle this. What do I do with this child that's so strong-willed?
Which is all of them.
Yes, it's right. All of them.
Well, yeah. And I think that wisdom thing is important, too, in those transition stages, because especially if you're used to the initial stages of parenting your child at a certain age, and then they start changing, you don't know how to parent that child in the next stage, and we definitely need wisdom as our children grow. So.
Right. Now, this first stage we're going to talk about, both of your children have just passed through this stage, and you survived. and it's called, what I've given the title to is Imprint, Commander, and Training. And this is from ages 1 to 6. And remember what he said, these were not given exact ages, scientific. They will be flexible because they overlap. At this stage, they're very dependent on you. And they, a lot of times when they're very young, you do everything for them. And there's a lot of parental control at this stage, which is very important. Because, you know, you tell them when to go to bed, what to eat, what to wear. No, you can't do this. Yes, you can do that. It's constant. And when they're young, you think, will we ever get through this stage? You do. And at this stage, the child are all ears. Doesn't mean they obey you, but they all ears. They listen. They want to know what the parent thinks at this stage between 1 and 6. And they accept the values and the beliefs, and there's no question. Whatever mom and dad believe, that's what I believe, and there's no question. And at this stage, they love games and stories, songs, memorization, tools. These are all tools in order to which to teach them. And I was thinking about this. This is nothing to do with grandparenting, but it is now that I remember I said to Paris a couple of years ago, I said, you know, she's 9, she's about 7. I said, oh, Paris, Grandma doesn't want you to grow up any. I want you to stay the same. And she said, oh, Grandma, I can't. I have to grow up. I said, well, who's going to color with me now? Because, you know, I always had crayons. That was my thing. They came to my house. I always had coloring books and crayons because I love to color. I love to draw. So when they came, they'd go, right, because I had a little section there. They knew this is what you do at Grandma's house. They'd go up, get the crayons and put them on the table and get out all the coloring books. And we would sit and color. And then it was a good time because, you know, you could say, you know, you could ask them little questions about themselves. Or they would talk to you. So they would get to know you and you would get to know them. So.
And then they want you to make soup.
And soup, yeah. I don't soup.
Every time.
It's nothing special. Not homemade. Some, yeah.
They love it.
Anyway, I'm going to miss that season. But anyway, I can't hold them back. at this stage, there's a lot of rules and a lot of boundaries.
A lot of control.
Yeah, a lot of control. And they need all those boundaries because, you know, if you don't teach them this when they get older, because there's rules and boundaries out in society, you just can't do whatever you want, you know. So it's good to teach them that. And then Proverbs 22:6.
Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it.
Yeah, training is part of discipline. And it's loving discipline. It's not disciplining when you're angry or when you're frustrated. That's the time you want to discipline because you're really you're feeling it. I know. Listen, I wasn't the perfect mother. I did it when I was angry, right, Brent? So, so you know, but I'm just saying the best discipline you can do is to learn to control your temper, and then, you know, when you have quieted down, then deal with the discipline because it's much more effective on them because then you can talk to them about what they did wrong. And loving discipline, it develops the skills in your child's life and it gives some orderly behavior, which we all want to see in our children even when they grow up. And you're disciplining them for your child's success for the future. You have to think of it as for the future. And then you're establishing peace in the home. Isn't that wonderful? And so we all want peace in the home. And loving discipline also teaches that there are consequences for their bad behavior. Because listen, in life, there's consequences for your bad behavior. You just can't do whatever you want. You can't go to a job and act a certain way and think that you're not going to get fired or, you know, these are all principles for the future.
Well, I think sometimes people, too, they think that they're going to stunt the child from expressing themselves if they control them or, you know,
discipline.
I mean, we've all seen some child like having a tantrum in the mall. And if you're a parent, you should obviously never look down at that person because you know how hard it can be. But also there's nothing wrong with picking up your child and controlling them because you have to be their conscience and because they're just selfish. Has anyone discovered this about your young children? They're just so selfish and life is all about them. And until they're at that stage where they can get past that, you have to teach them that. And so you have to be able to control them. And you don't have to do it in anger or frustration. But you shouldn't let your children express anger and, you know, you just got to pick them up and control them.
Especially when they're out. Proverbs 13:24.
A refusal to correct is a refusal to love. Love your children by disciplining them. I think you loved me too much sometimes.
Oh, I was just going to say that. We loved you a whole lot.
Thanks.
Oh, how about Proverbs 29:17?
Discipline your son and he will give you rest. He will delight to your heart. That was a setup right there.
It was. I liked it. You, every parent.
You
wants...
read the scriptures. Now I know why.
Every parent loves rest and delight. You want to rest and delight in your children. How about Proverbs 10:17?
The road to life is a disciplined life. Ignore correction and you're lost for good.
You made a comment. We were going through these scriptures.
Well, I think, I mean, a big part of it, too, is I think during these initial years, too, you get tired of it sometimes. And the consistency, though, is the important part. Because sometimes we just get tired of training and correcting and training and correcting. And will they ever hear me? Will they ever stop? Will they ever change? And it will only come with repetition. And, I mean, that's the school system has learned this. That repetition is a way to learn, and so you just have to repeat the same things over and over and over again, and you can't get tired of it. You have to be consistent, because that consistency, that's what the word discipline means, is training. And so when we're consistent with our training, our children learn something by repetition.
And I said something about lost on the road. I think children that don't have discipline in life, they are lost. They don't seem to have any direction. They're missing something in their life. Of course, in this time, in this season, you need unconditional love in your discipline and for your child. Because
it'll be all seasons, though, too, right? I mean,
yeah.
Every season, for sure.
Unconditional love for your child. Because you're doing it in love. You're doing it because you love this child. And I think you need a lot of forgiveness. And this is good anyway in families too. To forgive your child and forgive yourself. And then if as a spouse or as parents you get angry with your children or you get angry with each other in front of your children, and especially if you're disciplining and the other one starts interfering, that's not always a good thing. It's better to talk about it after. But I think you should apologize to your children too, that, hey, I blew it, I missed it, I'm sorry, just please forgive me. Because then that teaches them, oh, yeah, my parents are human, and what they're doing was not right. And so then that teaches your child also that he can learn to forgive and to forgive other people. Okay, now the next stage we want to talk about is ages 7 to 12, and we're calling that impression. The word impression means strong effect produced on the intellect and produced on the feelings and also their conscience. So they're highly impressionable at this age from 7 to 12. And, you know, I was thinking about the word conscience. And, you know, you see on the news some of these horrific things that happen. And then you wonder, you say to yourself, how could that person ever do such a horrible thing? They must not have a conscience. And then I wonder if maybe their conscience was not trained when it was younger. And then in life, sometimes the conscience becomes seared. But I think a parent helps to train a child's conscience to know what's from right, from wrong. Ephesians 6 and 4.
Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord.
Okay, I'm going to let you talk about that.
What do you want me to say?
Well, you're a father.
I thought you were doing. I was just reading scriptures.
No. We must have a thought.
Well, I think to the not provoking your children, I think partly back to that transition thing when, you know, like I said, I was big on the control part in their early stages of life, but then you have to learn to transition. And I think partly those stages are the indicators for a transition when you start realizing your children are frustrated by you. And I don't think sometimes we mean to do that, but we can frustrate our children and they just become irritated. And then you kind of feel like you're losing your voice with them. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? And so in those times, we have to adjust our parenting and we have to move from control to influence. Because the control side is very easy. When they're young and they're small, we can completely control them, physically dominate them, intellectually dominate them. And if I can make mention of that too, back to stage one, don't reason with your toddlers.
No.
There's no time. That's for one of the other stages. That's for, you know, sometimes we get things in the wrong stage. There's no reasoning with a toddler because it just, well, why? And there's no
understand.
Point in explaining to them because they don't understand the context for things like that. So anyway, back to the, so you don't want to frustrate your children. So you have to be discerning enough to realize because you're going for the friendship. You want to get to the friendship. And that doesn't mean that you light on discipline or light on all these other areas. But you have to not be provoking your children, and you have to sort of dial back the control and dial up the influence. And you have to do that as you go, because eventually you will have no control over them, but they still need you, and you still want them to be your parent. And so if you've tried to maintain that control through their ages, you'll lose the influence.
Okay, so we're still on stage two now. From
how was that, Mother?
That was very good.
Thank you.
I think you covered some of my points.
Sorry.
Ahead, but that's all right. They accepting whatever you say is starting without question is now gone, because now they want to know the why of everything and the what. But you know, as being a busy mom, you know, you have to think, why are they asking me so many questions? But you know, that's the stage that they're going through, and they need answers from you. Like, so give answers on the level that they are. But that's part of their growing up stage. They want to know the why and the what. But, and they're still open to a lot of direction and influence at this stage. No more, you know, have you ever said to your kids, because I said so? Well, that doesn't cut it anymore at this age. You know, you can say that when they're little, because I said so, because you don't want to explain it all to them. They won't understand. But you can't say that anymore at this age. And you have, at this stage, too, you have to start helping them to guide through all the information that's coming their way. You know, from the internet, from computers, television, from their friends. Man, they got a lot more information coming their way than when I was growing up. So you have to, as a parent, help them sort through this and make sense of what they're hearing.
Can I say something on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think partly too, when you get to this stage, it's good not to have arbitrary things. Do this because I said so, because partly what you're doing when you start explaining to them why, you're training them how you think, and that's what you want, right? You want to train your children how you think. Well, no, we're just going to let them be free and let them decide what they want. No, that's not true. No one actually believes that. You actually want your children to understand the things that you've thought and you've learned, and you have a reason why that you want them to go to bed at 8:30, don't you? Why? Because you know if they stay up past 8:30, the next day is a disaster.
Cranks.
And so you explain that to them. No, I want you to go to bed. Now, why? Because I said so. No, explain it to them. Help them to understand some things. And then that's true of everything in the life. Everything in life, as you go to school, as they're making choices, as they're making friends, as you want them to do their homework. All of those things have reasons when you explain to them your reasons. And then, once again, that's like you're creating another version of yourself.
They don't necessarily like what you're telling them.
Yeah. But. And I don't mean like in a brainwashing, weird way. But I mean, you know, you do want to have this child be your friend in the future.
Help understand the rationale behind your beliefs, what you believe, so they understand, because you should be able to know why you believe what you believe. And you know what? They may start even, and they may not at this age, but maybe even the next stage, they start debate and a little bit argue with you about what you're teaching. But you know, don't become ever defensive about what you believe, because you know, see that as a positive, not a negative thing, because you want them to outgrow blind acceptance. You don't want your children to just accept anything that comes down the pike, right, everywhere, out in society and what their friends are saying. And you want them to be able to think, hey, that's not, you know, because you've already been teaching them. So, and you want them to learn to think for themselves and not to be following what everybody else is saying, all their friends. And another good thing, this is good in this stage, but it's also good in the teenage stage, is don't freak out as a parent when they come and tell you something. Oh, we just burned down the garage, Mom. Ah! No, that's a little extreme.
I almost did that once, but not the garage. It was trees on the side of the house. I almost.
Oh, did you? Oh, I forgot.
We'll talk about
that.
It later.
I probably freaked out.
No, you didn't know.
Oh, I didn't know. Oh.
It was pine needles.
You were afraid to.
Pine needles burn very fast when they're dry.
Oh dear. You were afraid to tell me.
Yeah.
Or to tell Dad, maybe. Okay, stage three. Okay, about the freaking out thing is that if you allow them to come and tell you something, and you and in your mind you're thinking that is so awful, and that is, you know what they're, what, you know. Otherwise, if you're better off to just say, "Oh, is that right?" And then after you've, you know, let them go their way, and after you've thought about it a bit, then you know everything. You say, you know, go back to your child and say, you know that conversation we had today and you were telling me about this, you know, then maybe you could go to them and say, do you think that was a very good idea what they did, or what do you think about that? You know, maybe if you allow them to what they think about it, and then you say, you know, I'd like to tell you what I think about it. And then they're more apt to talk to you and about things without you going into spastics and everything else. Anyway, because we parents can go crazy. Okay, here's the next stage, three. You're watching the clock, eh? Because you know me, I'd be here all day.
You're fine.
Stage three is called, we're calling this the coaching and the counselor. You're now, see, every stage, okay, your children are changing, but parents have to change. You have to change with their next stage. You don't remain the same. You have to be aware of it. Changes for
and
you.
As a big example, like I said, the control thing that I talked about for that 1 to 6, it does not work in this stage. It just doesn't work because you can't. I mean, first thing, they're too big. You can't pick them up and you can't control them any longer. You really have to move to becoming their coach or counselor for sure.
Right. Deuteronomy 6:6-7.
These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up. Let me just say one thing before you. I know for me, this is big with my daughters. I mean, I'm always taking the opportunity to train them with like everything, specifically boys. It's with my oldest one now, and this is why I love watching reality television with my oldest daughter, because I can say, never bring a boy home like that. And I can explain why. The show continue, and I explain to them why and why it's important. Hey, that guy is being nice, and so hey, I'm just training them.
Yeah, it's constant. Did you read it? Did you read it?
I did. I read it. Oh. Impress them on your children. Talk about when you sit at home,
watching
reality television.
I was so busy listening to you. Yeah, you take every opportunity, going wherever you're going at night when you're. At the mealtime, every opportunity. I mean, you don't preach at them all the time, but you always think, oh, that's a learning...
It's a teaching spot.
A teaching spot for me to say something. And then parents, you said already, have to be consistent. Realize that they are approaching adulthood. The 13-year-old, now that we've got 13 to 18, the 18 is more close to adulthood, but that is the season they're starting to approach adulthood. You're thinking, oh, no. Yes, they are. They need to be allowed to form their own opinions and values. Because if you don't let them, they're going to go out and give these opinions somewhere else, or they're going to get opinions for somewhere else. And not only that, when they go to university and go to high school, you know, they have to learn to question everything. So if you allow them to talk and give their opinions, then they're giving them to you, and that's when you can give your little
right, and
piece.
If in the previous stage you haven't freaked out yeah. when they come to you with questions and stuff, they will come to you when they're yeah. teenagers to talk these things through with yeah. you, and you can give your reasons.
And also the previous investment that you've already made in their life from stage one and two will equip them to form these values in a little more informed, mature manner because you've already deposited into their lives. The parent job is now changing. Now you're going from teacher to coach. I wish I had known this. I wish I had known all this, you people, all your mothers that got children now growing up. I didn't understand all this. Now I can look back and see, but you know, I would be wondering, why are they acting like this? What's happening? Anyway, a good coach.
I made it through.
Yeah, I know. A good coach allows the teen to make and learn mistakes. You know, like, they'll do something and make a mistake. So you have to be careful that as a parent, you're not bailing them out all the time. There's some things you have to bail them out, but there's some things you just say, well, you know.
We're not talking about jail.
Yeah. To, you know, so that they're going to learn from their mistake. Yes, very good.
No, and I think that's, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, and I think today specifically, this is a big challenge for people. Like, if your child is facing discipline because of something they did wrong at school, don't go in and get them out of it. Don't go in and scold the teacher for yeah. getting your child in trouble. Let them face it. That's what life is. If they've done something wrong, let them face the consequences, because that's the way life is. If you go in and you're mad at the principal and the vice principal and the teacher because your child actually broke the rules, you're teaching them the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
Let them face the stuff, and then when they face it, you get to have a long conversation.
Well, they learn from it.
Yeah. About what they did and why it's wrong.
I can remember there was a teacher in public school that you did not like. She was very, very strict. You know, you used to come home and say this and that, you know, and I thought, you want to
protect them.
Yeah, you want to say, oh, how could you be like that? You know, you want to go because you want to nurture and protect, especially as a mother, protect your child. But I thought, no, he has to learn to have a teacher that he doesn't like, because in life there are people
you
won't like or that you have to work with. So you have to learn to get along
right.
and go through it. Okay, and a good coach is getting the players ready for the game, and you're getting and preparing your children for the game of life. The coaches don't play the game for them. But what the coach does now is motivate, encourage, challenge, and advise. And there's no longer, like you said, there's no longer the force feed and the control. You have to stop that. And you have to help them to articulate what they believe, you know, and challenge their thinking, because their thinking is going to be challenged out there.
Right.
It's better that you challenge their thinking so that you can talk to them. And you can always remind them of the basics of the first two stages of their life. And it's good to provide a safe environment for them to wrestle, even question the values that are taught. It's good to allow them to do that, and to not to treat your child like they were in the past two stages of their life. That's easy as parent, because you can fall back into that other stage because it was so comfortable for you.
Right.
And now this is a little harder, and be willing to wrestle the tough questions alongside of them. and be informed. You know, and be informed and search out something. Like if they're hearing something out there in school or whatever, and you think to yourself, now you'd like to contribute because you know what they're teaching out there is maybe not good, or you want to be able to give your thoughts about it. So go and search out the issues for them and be engaged with them. That's what a good coach does. A good coach doesn't always have all the answers either. So, but a good coach can point the way to the good answers.
Can I mention one thing, too, about this? I think I know one of the things that my parents did and my wife and I are endeavoring to do is we don't tell our kids stuff that we don't want our kids to do and be involved with. We don't say to them, we don't do that because we're Christians. That's a weak answer. And then what you're doing is you're training your children that Christianity is a bunch of we don't do's. Have good reasons why you don't do stuff. Have a thought out reason why you don't. And don't blame Christianity. Why you? Because sometimes if something that their friends are doing seems fun and they say, oh, I can't do that because I'm a Christian, it's bad psychology for you to do. So have good reasons. I mean, this is not a condemnation to anybody in here today. If you're a smoker, have at it, but it's probably a good idea to quit. But I tell my children, we're not mad at you, I tell my children, this is my reason. The only reason somebody starts smoking, the only reason ever, is because you're trying to look cool. That's it.
Especially teenagers.
Because nobody, the first time they smoke a cigarette, is like, oh, this is awesome. They're choking. And they're like, I said, so the only reason somebody starts smoking is trying to look cool. So don't start smoking. And so I have a good reason. I don't say, don't smoke because we're Christians. Because that's a bad reason sometimes. And it is. And because you want, once again, you want your relationship with God, for me, to be about what we do, what we're a part of, what's good, and all these different things. And because a love does. And that's the huge part of Christianity. So you don't take your relationship with God and give it to your kids. We don't do this, we don't do this, we don't do this, we don't do this because they're Christians. Have good reasons why you don't do certain things.
That's good.
And another thing, when we were talking about this, that you said to me that Dad was really good at is not letting us quit things.
Yeah.
That when we started stuff, if we signed up for something, he did not let us quit. If
lessons.
Specifically, we spent money on it. He didn't let us quit. But if we started lessons or a team or a club, we were not allowed to quit stuff. And then also, this is a big one in this stage, work. You have to train your children to work. And this was big, and this is not, you don't have to do this, but I know in all the way, growing up in my house, I knew when I was 16, I had to get a job. It was not an option.
A part-time job.
But in the summer, when I was 16 years old, there was no more golfing all summer. There was no more playing all summer. When I was 16, I had to get a job. And I had to work every day all summer. It was terrible, but it was awesome. Looking back at it, I was trained properly. And this is the way, and my daughters know this, when you are 16, you are getting a job, even maybe before. And then sometimes they have a job. They have a job in your house. Why? Because you want them to work.
Yeah,
right?
Not to be lazy.
And you don't have to pay for everything.
In this stage, the three, we're in the 13 to 18. The spiritual training for your children, as parents, you can't wing it anymore. And you can't just give some pat answer off the top of your head.
Right.
Because they're going to, well, what does that mean? You know, and say, oh, well, we blah, blah, blah. No, they need to know a reason for the hope that lies within you. Otherwise, you know what? They're going to go out somewhere else.
Yep.
And they're going to get some teaching or something somewhere else. So you need to take advantage.
You done that one?
Yeah.
The last thing I have in that one is pick your battles. Don't fight about everything when they're teenagers. Otherwise, you'll be fighting forever. Let certain stuff go. Oh, I have laundry written down there, too.
That's for you.
Yeah, it is for me. One of the things, when I got to the end of this stage, that my mother made me do my own laundry.
And that was hard for me because I was a stay-at-home mom.
It was hard for me.
Because...
Why is that hard for you?
I know you thought You thought, what has happened? She's the worst mother in the whole world. That's what you told me. You're not doing my washing for me, and we're the worst mother in the world.
But that's the point. I mean, the point is you're training them because you want them to live without you, don't you?
No.
You
know,
that's the goal. They want them to know how to do all that stuff when they leave
I can remember when that happened to me because I was a stay-at-home mom. I didn't mind doing the washing or ironing.
I didn't mind that you did it either.
No. But, I was home. It was a good thing for me to do. But then I can remember all of a sudden one day it just came on me. What are you doing his laundry? I thought...
You were loving me.
No. But, I know what was happening to me was that the Lord was preparing me because you were going to Bible school and you were going to the States, and I was no longer going to be able to do your
laundry.
Don't blame
God for the laundry thing.
No, I'm stuck, and I was impressed to... Yes.
Okay,
whatever.
Let's go to the next one.
Yeah, that was a big thing. Maybe we help some parent here today. Who knows? Anyways.
If you have a 20-year-old living in your house that you're still doing their laundry.
Was I doing your laundry?
No, I'm saying anybody in this room, you need to stop.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're to stage four.
For my sake.
Stage four is now we're calling this a consultant and friendship. And this is ages 19 plus. Usually by then they've finished their high school, they're going to either to college or university, or they're starting a career. This is the difficult time for parents because this is the letting go time.
Let's all say that together.
Letting go. Oh, I was so glad that, you know what, the Lord helped me. The Lord, I'm blaming the Lord again, but
no,
I got help. I thought it was good because when you went, Sherry and you went to college and didn't live at home anymore, that was a preparation for me. Yeah, they're gone. And they were virtually gone from my life because when you graduated, they both got married. So that was truly a letting go time in my life.
Right.
But, your task of parenting isn't done, but it changes again. You're no longer taking the initiative in making all the decisions for them.
And you shouldn't want to.
No.
You shouldn't want to.
See, this is what parents do. They hang on.
Because they're used to doing it.
Used to doing it.
So they're
frightened because they know this is being taken from them. But be patient with them at age and be available. This is what you need to be at this age. Give advice when you're asked. Just be available with your advice when you're asked. Okay, Proverbs 20.
Say that again.
When you're asked.
So there's 20-somethings out here who are wishing their parents are listening. I'm just telling you.
Well, maybe their parents will.
When they're asked.
When they're asked. I know, but that's hard for parents. Because we've been doing it for so long.
That's what I'm saying.
I wasn't perfect.
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying.
I missed it a lot of times. I could be a better mother now if I had a chance to do it all over again. Okay, Proverbs 27:11.
Be wise, my son, and bring joy to my heart.
Oh, isn't that good? Yeah. Your children, when they're wise and they do wise things, you think, man, that was good, the good decision they make. It brings a lot of joy to your heart.
But then I think at this stage, you have to trust your training.
Yeah.
Right? So you've trained them, and you can't be trying to control their every decision and their movement. I mean, there's a lot of practicalities that go with this stage, depending on if you're finished school, if you're working, curfew questions, have I gone away to school, and am I back home, all these nuances of it. And then if your child has left and come back and they're living at home, you can't go back to the coaching stage.
No, you can't.
Because they've been living without you for 3 or 4 years or whatever the case may be.
You're wondering how they ever got along without you.
And you should have an exit plan for them if they come back. Somebody's happy about that one. You should want them to go.
Yeah.
You should want them to go because if you've done it right, they'll want to come back.
To visit you.
To visit.
And don't prolong these roles. That's, I think, what we said. If you prolong these roles, going back to the other roles, you will probably invite resistance and maybe resentment.
If you hold on to them too long, they're wanting to pull away, but if you're able to let them go when the time is right, they'll want to come back. But if you keep squeezing through the 20s, saying, no, stay with me.
So if you're wondering why your children, if they're this age, you feel some resentment, that could be it. So where am I? Stage 4. Wow.
No, we're done. That's it. Let's go.
Am I done?
We got to move here. Let's do mother-in-lawing real quick.
Even though we can't talk about friendship?
We can't go.
Okay, I just want to say something quick about friendship.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Where am I?
I thought we did it.
Did we do it?
I can't.
Okay, I got so much here.
Writing.
Okay, all right. Okay, friendship. Okay, this is the stage when you do it right, be your friend. So yes, I had already written all this out about your children becoming your friend. So yesterday, Sherry came over to my house and brought me a card and wished me Happy Mother's Day because, you know, she's at church, another church and everything. So, and I thought, Lord, this is something. Here's my card, and I brought it to read it to you. It says, always a mother, always a friend. They're not friends when they're little, but they're friends when it's always a mother, someone who cares for you and about you all through your life, someone whose guidance you value, concern you appreciate, love you depend on. I haven't read your card yet. Always a friend, someone to laugh with and share things with, someone you can count on to help you out, back you up, and never let you down. Thank you for being a wonderful mother and the very best kind of friend. Oh, this is like $1 million.
Right.
You know, when you get this kind of card, and then she wrote down the mom, thanks for being my mom and my friend. And we do. We talk. We go sometimes have coffee and we talk and we don't never stop talking. So I thought this is the best reward that I could ever have, anything that as a mother.
Well, see, okay. And I know you guys say you didn't do everything right, but I know that is one of the things for Sherry and I, that we want to be with you guys. Like, sometimes your drive is crazy, but generally speaking, we want to be with you and our kids like you. Our kids like you and want to be with you. No, which is great. I love that because when I say my girls, you know, like and they want to go over there because they want the soup and they want a color, and then when we get there, they don't want to leave. And so for me, That's really
nice
great.
For you, because then I'm doing all the stuff.
Except my laundry, whatever.
Yeah.
Not bitter about it.
Okay, what are we doing? Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law.
Now? All right, this is something. Okay, I'm speaking today as a mother-in-law.
Do it quick, though.
Yeah, I'll do my best. Okay, I can't.
I have 3 jokes, so let me know when you're ready.
Okay.
I have 3 mother-in-law jokes. I looked them up.
When do you want to do them now?
You just let me know.
Well. Okay, to go fast, I'm just going to read this.
Okay.
Otherwise,
all right.
You know, I could go on.
Well, go. I'm going to interrupt you, though. Go, just because.
So okay.
Keep
okay, so I'm speaking now as a mother-in-law. And the word mother-in-law has a lot of, when you hear the word mother-in-law, right away you think jokes,
here we go,
groans,
I got them. Perfect.
Wait a minute,
let
me finish.
Them.
Laughter, bad stories. I've heard them myself. Okay, go ahead.
Right. But here's the deal about my mother. She is an excellent mother-in-law, and you can ask Nicole and Alan. She is, and part of the big reason why she is an excellent mother-in-law.
Is this a joke?
This is real. I'll tell you the jokes in a second. That was good. The reason she's a great mother-in-law is she stays out of our business. My dad, not so much, but my mom. My mom is fantastic, and once again, you ask Nicole, it's true. Okay, listen, I was out shopping the other day when I saw 6 men beating up my mother-in-law. As I stood there and watched, her neighbors who knew me said, well, aren't you going to help? I replied, no, 6 of them is enough.
Oh, that's awful.
I know, but it's so funny. Why were Adam and Eve the happiest and most blessed couple in the world? Because neither of them had a mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is a well-balanced person. She's got a chip on both shoulders.
Oh, not all mother-in-laws are bad.
No, nobody in this room.
No. So, but we're just going to share. But, unfortunately, in the ministry, I have dealt with a lot. There's been a lot of situations with the mother-in-laws. They've earned this bad reputation. But I want to say, I personally decided not to be one of those statistics, because I remember hearing, I thought, what is the problem? I'm going to be a mother-in-law. I was almost scared to be a mother-in-law. I heard all these bad things. But I decided I was not going to be I loved my children too much to hurt them in this way. My husband and I were blessed with our daughter-in-law, Nicole, who we call our daughter-in-love, and our son-in-love, Alan. We had been praying for our children's life partners for years, and our prayers were answered in abundance. We decided beforehand to love and support whoever they chose as their life partners. Some points to remember in a mother-in-law relationship is to realize that your children's life partner is not a competition, but it is a partnership, because they both love the same person.
Meaning, you know, your child.
Yeah. 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 One of the reasons that I loved Iola, my mother-in-law, was that she brought Earl B. into the world. And you know, your mother almost died having you, right? Because at that stage, you came out feet first, right? And at that stage, in, you know, that's 76 years ago. You know, the
75.
Yeah, 75, right. Sorry. Yeah, that's right, 75. At that time, the doctors didn't know how to deal. What was that called? A breach?
Breach.
They didn't know how to do that. So they told your mom not to have any more children because of that. So anyway, so that was one of the reasons. I loved you for other reasons, but I won't. Oh, I'm supposed to go quickly. As mother-in-laws, we need to realize that our children and spouse need time and space to develop and grow in their relationship and to become secure in all the areas of their lives, just as we did. You have to remember what it was like for yourself when you first got married, how you didn't know how to do anything. We also respect their privacy, we decided, and don't go to their place unless we're invited and asked. That was one of the decisions
we made. And if you aren't invited and asked, don't call and say, well, we never get invited over.
No, I know. Put a guilt trip on them. Yeah, don't do that. Some mothers and fathers at this time may experience empty nest syndrome, is what they call it. That's a feeling loss of purpose with the children gone, and there's because major changes are taking place in the family structure. I have a little advice for you as a couple is that when your children are getting in that teenager, you start developing your relationship, making it strong, so realize the children will be gone and you two will be alone together, just like you were before the children came. But you know, it's a wonderful time. We get to go places now. We don't have to think about babysitting. You know, we just go whenever we want.
Think about babysitting.
We don't have to ask you.
How about you babysit?
Oh, yeah, no, that's another thing. I'm just saying, I'm talking about if you're alone.
I got you.
Okay, you got me. You're not supposed to interrupt me if you want me to get finished. To view your children as grown up and not to interfere. I thought of one thing is child rearing, and when they buy something, don't interfere. Like, don't say, why did you buy that? And then if they're going to go on an expensive holiday, you're thinking, like, don't say anything unless they ask your advice. In other words, keep quiet. And another thing I say for mother-in-laws, MYOB, which stands for mind your own business. You know, if you learn to do that, it's a good thing in life.
And all the husbands said.
And it's the parents, the mother-in-law, and the father-in-law's responsibility to make the children's spouses to feel welcome in the family as a family member.
Right.
Your children have enough love for your spouse and for you. You don't have to think, well, now they're not going to love me anymore. That's so silly. They got a heart full of love that can love both.
Right.
So, and don't see them as a threat to you and your children's relationship. They are not a threat to you. All right. That's all I have to say for mother-in-law. Have you done?
We got to skip the grandparenting.
What?
We got to skip the grandparenting.
Okay, that's fine. We'll skip it.
So I thought I could have you pray for the moms and the parents, and then we'll dismiss.
Okay, one thing. Grandparenting is wonderful.
That's all I have to say. I had a whole page, but we're running out of time. If you want to know about it, come see me privately. Also, who am I praying for?
Whoever you like to pray for.
All right. Okay.
Thank you for listening. Please feel free to send in your prayer requests or stories about what God is doing in your life to info@harvestfamilychurch.ca.